Hey, beautiful people. I'm Sarah, and welcome to my show, Ignited by Inner Beauty, a podcast that is setting the world on fire with body positivity, female empowerment, and self-love. If you need some feel-good vibes and a reminder of just how beautiful you truly are, then you came to the right place. I'm so excited to share what's in store for you today. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 48 of Ignited by Inner Beauty. Today on the show, we speak with Kara Stevens, who is the founder of The Frugal Feminista, which is a financial wellness and safe space for women of color and other marginalized groups. And she is all about helping heal people's relationship with money. And I just absolutely loved her perspective on how it's more about just understanding our finances. It really goes beyond that because the way we interact with money and our thoughts and feelings around it really can affect our lives at large. It can affect how we think about risk, how our relationships with other people or significant others are. It really ties into so many aspects of our lives. So healing our relationship with money can really help us heal, you know, maybe stressful parts of our lives and just help us thrive overall. So that is so much of what Kara talks about. And I just absolutely loved her message and what she does to really support women, especially women of color, in a world that's really focused on finances for men or white wealthy men. So I just really love how she is uplifting that community as well. It was just such a pleasure to speak with her. And you'll hear more from her in this episode. And I also want to thank you for listening today. That really helps me support the podcast. You can also support the podcast by writing me a review on Apple Podcasts or checking out my website, ignitedbyinnerbeauty.com, where you can buy merchandise or check out my Body Positive Book Club for Women as well. So thank you for being here. And without further ado, here's my interview with Kara. Well, thank you so much, Kara, for joining me. I am so excited to interview you. Why don't you start us off by just telling our audience a little bit about yourself, introducing yourself, and also talking about how you are ignited by inner beauty.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for this. I was really looking forward to this conversation. My name is Kara Stevens, and I'm founder of The Frugal Feminista. And The Frugal Feminista is a financial wellness safe space for women of color and other marginalized groups that are really committed to healing at a high level, but in particular, our relationship with money, so that we can actually go on to thrive, not just materially, which is important, but also spiritually. And I would say in terms of what kind of ignites my inner beauty, I would say in a similar vein, it's the healing. Healing, I think, helps you activate inner beauty, because as someone who's been traditionally very much attached to, you know, getting the student award as a kid, you know, then getting the scholarship and all these kind of external validators, I had to realize that I had to create my own measures of success. And that required me to really rethink and rewrite so many different relationships I had with risk, success, with fear, with money. And in doing that, I had to heal. And I think that's where I would consider my new level of inner beauty, and maybe like an outer glow, but it's not like necessarily a product. It comes from within.
Such a wonderful answer. I love that. And tell me a little bit more about what you got you to start The Frugal Feminista and what really sparked you to start that business.
Well, the truth of it is, it was that I had graduated from undergrad and I had credit card debt and I had student loan debt, and I didn't know I had to pay it back. I used to look at the credit card statements and the request for payment for my student loan lender as a request and not necessarily something that was mandatory. So I would ignore them. Like, honestly, just thinking that they would get the hint that I wasn't paying it back if I just ignored them, and they kept on coming, and the balances would grow because there was late fees, and then it was added on with the interest of the new higher principal. And so I remember vividly being at my mom's house and getting this new bill and asking my mom, kind of complaining to her, saying, "Mom, don't they get it? Like, I'm not paying it back." And she looked at me like, "Girl, you gotta pay this money back." And I was like, "Really? I do?" So I had graduated, ironically, with a background in economics, but I didn't know, I knew, countries and world economies, but I didn't know anything about personal finance. But I did know how to read and write. That was one thing my degree gave me. So I went to the library and found some books, in particular Glenda Bridgeforth's book, Girl, Get Your Money Straight, about personal finance. And from there, I just found a new love. I didn't know that there was a world of personal finance. And in particular, because Glenda was, at that time I was in my 20s, and Glenda Bridgeforth was in her 50s. And so there were some gaps in the things that she was talking about that I could relate to. So I said, "You know what, let me fill this gap." And so I started a blog spot called Girl, Get Your Life Together, as a nod to
Nice.
that, but just kind of sharing what it meant to be 20, underemployed or unemployed. I experienced all of that, cobbling together money, trying to figure out love life, trying to figure out social life, trying to figure out the meaning of life. And I shared it on the blog spot. And that eventually got other people's attention, my girlfriend's attention. They're like, "Talk about this, write about this." And I said, "Okay, I could read or write. That's one thing I could definitely do." And then other larger blogs and news outlets started to pick up on it, and they invited me to write on there. And then from there, the Frugal Feminista eventually was born. But the pivot in particular toward healing, the healing aspect of the Frugal Feminista, and that's where I feel is like my sweet spot, is because after being able to, achieve a lot of the things that many of us check off, getting out of debt, making a lot of money. I was a teacher, then I became a school administrator. I still had these the shame, these feelings of inadequacy, these feelings of fear and scarcity around money. So I was like, it can't be the number, because I have the numbers. I have zero debt and, income. So it was deeper than that. And so I started to think more deeply about where the ideas and stories around money coming from, and explored that, just through self-discovery and also through therapy. And while my therapy sessions weren't about money, it helped me begin to make connections between my childhood and messages around risk, around fear, around validation, and be able to paint the picture and connect the dots for myself. And now I'm able to do that for other women. So that's how the Frugal Feminista started and had its 2.0 and 3.0 reinventions.
Wow, I love that. Such a great story. And it's like you're passing it on to something that you figured out, and you're passing on your knowledge to other women. I love that. So tell me a little bit more about maybe some of like the common questions or fears that people have around money, or that you've experienced through doing this type of work.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I think that one of the most common questions that I get is it too late for me? I get that a lot. Is it too late for me to heal my relationship with money? Is it too late for me as a result to grow wealth? Is it, how do I begin to talk to my partner who may not be on board with this new transformation that I'm going through? How do I break generational cycles of poverty? How do I limit my spending? How do I understand my triggers and work around them? How do I release shame around my money story, or around my debt, or around being in bankruptcy? And a lot of those answers come through being able, one, to accept the reality of what things are. Not to say that you're going to stay in this place, but understand that these things are very temporary. But it's the work of the mind and the spirit around the stories you tell yourself about why you get to where you are. So if you say that I'm incompetent, I'm inadequate, I'm stupid, I'm not worthy, and you use your finances as evidence of that, you're probably going to stay there a lot longer. Rather than, if I learned more about finances, if I join a class, if I go to coaching, if I go to therapy and get the tools that I need in order to change the evidence that I see or create new pieces of evidence to support that I am learning, this is a process of learning, it can be learned, then you begin to have different responses and different behaviors and different attitudes towards money. So I find that everything starts with the belief system and then creating evidence to support that belief, even if it's in the smallest ways.
Wow. Yeah, it's so interesting that you, and I love how you're tying it back to really a bigger picture. It's more than just knowing the ins and outs of finances. Like you said, you were like, I'm doing great. And it's still something maybe a little bit deeper and at an emotional level. Was there maybe a turning point for you where you felt more empowered in your finances and you kind of did the inner work that kind of was relayed out and you felt good about I guess about money and finances like on outward as well.
Yeah, I think there have been like several experiences that I've either seen, observed, and then reflected on, or actively have pursued changing a money story. So I'll start with the latter because it's easier for us to maybe have a memory and then decide to have a new ending. So growing up, I grew up with a single mom from the Caribbean, from Antigua. And my mom was tremendous in her ability to raise two kids by herself. But in the process of being left by my father, she had retreated into herself in a lot of ways and had beliefs that the world wasn't fair. The world kind of owed her the life that she had been promised through marriage, two parent income and being an immigrant in a new country. It was like, I'm in this random country by myself now. And so a lot of the things around money became not just a numerical thing. It became a manifestation of she should have more. This isn't fair. I have to hold on to everything. And just this idea of being risk averse again with your heart and with your wallet, And so growing up, I saw that a lot. And in one particular story, I remember it being very difficult seeing my mom kind of how painful it was for her to spend on even discount sneakers for me. And I didn't even like those sneakers. And I tried my hardest to, be obedient, be agreeable. And I didn't even like those sneakers. And I remember seeing her painstakingly give the money. And I remember in my mind, oh my God, spending is bad. Spending makes you unhappy. So I should avoid it. And even things that I want, I shouldn't want it because it's almost going to be make other people unhappy. And so I turned it on myself. So for a lot of things, I wouldn't get exactly what I wanted. I would try and get the discounted thing. And so long story short, I decided like when I was in I kept on feeling this, but the impact of that belief permeated other things. Like I'm not gonna necessarily go after what I exactly want. I'm gonna go after something that's safe. And it permeates other aspects of your life. And so what I did as like a tribute to young Kara is that I went and got the sneakers that I wanted, right? I got the sneakers at, I'm 44, but, that was in my maybe early 40s or late 30s. I was tired of telling myself the same story. And that being able just to do that, to get the sneakers, enjoy the sneakers, I was able to change the story. So now it's like, I may not get what I want exactly in the moment, but I can get what I want eventually. And I can maybe shorten the time between thinking about something and getting what I want or realizing I'm no longer a child. That's a childlike thought. I can have adult thoughts. So who's actually controlling my thinking? And so I've updated and upgraded my thinking to believe, I can do these things. I deserve to do these things. I can put money aside to do these things and I can feel differently. I can feel pleasure. I can feel a sense of accomplishment. I can feel all the things that initially I didn't think I could feel when, because that was what was modeled. And so that's an example of, seeing a, having a moment, having a memory, and deciding to, you can't change the past, but you could definitely change the future.
Yeah, that's so insightful. I love that shift in mindset. Are there some tips or advice that you give to women who are maybe struggling with finances or maybe just struggling with those inner beliefs around, finances or fear and worry, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step is to give yourself grace that understand that there are a number of factors contributing to your money story. So it could be your childhood, it could be your religion, it could be gender, it could be if you're in a large family, you're the youngest, the middle, or the oldest. There are a lot of roles that are attached to us that we didn't actually offer or volunteer for. So understand that your inherited money story is not the end of your money story. That's one. I would say step two is to identify what you actually want out of life. I know, and especially when it comes to finances, and put a number on it. So let's just say that, sometimes people say, I'm a simple woman, but maybe you're not. Maybe you want all of the things, right? So I think it's important for you, number one, to be honest about what you want. What's your idea? We talk about abundance, but for some people, abundance is luxury. For some people, abundance is I can work when I want to. Sometimes it's a number of things. So identify what your definition of abundance is and then put a number on it, right? And what I mean by putting a number on it is, one, if you wanted a house, how much is the house going to cost? If you only wanted to work 40 hours a week, how much money would you need to make in order to meet your expenses, right? And then step three is to work your way toward being able to achieve that in a multi-level way. So that would mean first is getting an understanding of, now that you have an idea of what you want or what you identify as abundance, what do you have as the foundational pieces of that already? You probably have it someplace, but you probably haven't, you don't look at it that way. You probably think I don't have it. And I would say you have parts of it. You may not have the whole. So you may be on a spectrum of like maybe 100 is like when you have all those things, maybe you're at 15 or 20%, give yourself credit. And then how can I move it to the next 10% or the next 15%? So rather than look at things as like a zero sum game, look at it as incremental opportunities to spot the abundance, look for evidence of abundance. And so that's three. And I will say four is being able to rewrite the money stories that you have about yourself when it comes to money or any other thing that you may be in pursuit of. And as an example, I know a lot of us say, like I said earlier, I'm bad with money. Now, if you believe you're bad with money, then you're not going to do anything about it. But if you switch it to say, I can learn how to be better with money, or I'm taking classes to be better with money, or I can get the tools and tips and communities to support me to be better with money, then you're going to get the tools, the supports, and the tips. You have a bucket for tools, bucket for tips, bucket for community, and be able to find three to five of those things, whether it be podcasts, whether it be books, whether it be, meetups that align with that idea that you have. And I think the rest of it is don't take on too much, because every time we want to like overhaul our life, and then we get overwhelmed with the overhaul, right? You almost get overwhelmed by the possibility of abundance. So I would say start small, start with something that you're almost at 100% with, so you can finish it. Get that quick win and then go back. Think about the skills that you were able to discern and learn from it, and then apply it to the next goal that's almost to where you want it to be. So you don't feel like this is a heavy lift. I'm one for easy wins personally. I need it, right? You may want something a little bit like I stayed the course. That's up to you. Either way works. But just thinking about your personality, especially in the season of your life where a lot of other things are going on in your life and that you still want to get this win, what's the easiest way to get it? And also just thinking that easy doesn't mean bad, hard doesn't mean better. There's nothing noble about taking a longer time to do something that could have been done in a shorter period of time, or finding ways to make things easier for yourself. So I would say, I mean, I probably went through like six or seven steps, but I would say those steps can just get you into thinking, at a high level about your thinking, and then at the practical level, how do I actually do it?
Yeah, I think that's so great to start with. As you mentioned many times, like your belief system there, like you said, saying that I'm bad with money can be like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You'll never, like, you won't believe that you'll be able to do it until you kind of change that mindset. So I love that you focused on that. Are there any like success stories or things that you like to highlight of maybe a woman you've worked with or people who have really been changed by your message from the Frugal Feminista?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, but I would share a couple. So one, it was a lot of us talk about people who go from spending to getting out of debt. I like to also highlight people who underspent or who are oversavers based on scarcity. And I had one particular client who just found it very difficult to indulge, to have pleasure, to have play. And we went through the process of going through her money story. And she realized the reason that she held onto money so tightly was because she saw her mother go from having $1 million contract, $1 million home, to like living in families, living on families' couches. And she and her husband, in thinking that they don't want to do that, hoarded everything. But then through the work, she realized that one, she's not her mother. That's one thing. And number two, she wanted to spend more and had difficulty spending more. So we got a list of, well, what's your pleasure playlist? Like, what do you want to spend on? And then next thing I know, she's on Instagram talking about, I'm going to see these Broadway plays. I'm in New York, taking the things that she wanted and taking her husband. And I thought that was an amazing transformation story because we normally hear on the other side. But on the flip side, I've had clients who were deep in debt. And one of them just reached out to me recently and said that not only has she been able to pay off her debt, but she now has $10,000 in savings. And she's also working with her daughter to make sure that they kind of break those curses around spending emotionally or expecting other people to pay for them. So I consider that another success story. And then I just have in general, like with, corporate clients, I just get emails saying that the workshop, even professors who are, thinkers and thought leaders, just saying that, my belief system around what I could possibly have has been really impacted by the work that I do, because sometimes they think, I'm a scholar. It's almost like a spiritual person. I'm spiritual. The money doesn't matter. The learning does. But then they don't have enough money for retirement. So they're learning now how to stand up for themselves, build businesses or consulting businesses as a result of realizing that it's okay to want more. It doesn't make me a selfish person. It doesn't make me a necessarily greedy person. But these are the things that I want, and it's okay to want what I want. So I've seen, like, at the, those are just examples of that. And women who have improve their marriages as a result of understanding that how they communicate about money with their spouse is rooted in their respective money stories. And that if they actually listened to each other and learned what the spending or what the saving meant to each of them, they'll be able to talk about money at an evidence level, and also looking at each other as a team, as opposed to like, you're causing the problems, or you're too tight, or you're too loose with money, and create shared goals, and then make space for the spender to spend in a way that doesn't take away from the long-term goals, and the saver not to feel like the nagging, overbearing parent in a relationship, because they feel that the security is there and that gives them a sense of peace.
Those are great stories. I love that you're doing such great work for people. And at the beginning, you mentioned really focusing your work specifically targeting women and women of color. Can you tell me about your passion for working with a group of people?
Well, I mean, I'm a woman of color, so I do with what I do what I know. And as a woman, as a first generation American, I see that largely products around financial services are targeting, they tend to target wealthy white men who already maybe have money. And so the stories and the cultural nuance and even the trauma-formed approach to making money isn't there. And so people will say, well, just figure it out. But what if no one in your family talked about money? Or if it's a form of, there's a chance that you may be disowned or rejected in your family if you focus on money. Or perhaps you don't want to make millions of dollars, but you just want to have enough to live comfortably. Those messages aren't, there's not really a nuanced approach to finances out there other than like get rich and make it happen fast and invest and be aggressive. What happened if you're risk averse? What happened if you're not even aware of how to engage in the stock market? What if you want to, but no one even believes that you even have enough money? They're like, well, you probably don't even have enough to even start. So all those biases, those communities are locked out of opportunities to get well when it comes to money and to build wealth. And I know myself, I was lucky enough early even when I was in debt and even when I was a teacher, my financial advisor, he even told me later when we, after years of being together, like when he first met me, because I was young and pot and black, he was like, I didn't really think that you were going to actually come back. And I came back and I invested. I had $25. Do you know what I mean? But I was like, I understand. I want to learn how it works. And so just being discounted just because of your age or your race or your gender, is something that's very real. And so I wanted to make spaces for people who don't see themselves represented physically or like just in terms of those kind of markers, but also the internal piece around finances. I mean, I studied economics, and one of the major assumptions about money is that man by nature is rational. And I said, who do you know? Who? And I was like, that always stuck with me. Like, how can you actually believe that? And so if you're thinking that, then you're missing the whole picture of why, that's why, these various economic equations don't work when you put people's emotions, political levels, and just people's needs and desires, it doesn't work. So I've always felt that there needed to be a little bit more space for other voices there.
Yeah, that's so great. I think it is so like dominated by white men, like you're saying, and seeing someone like yourself just advocating and doing the work that you're doing is so great. And actually reminds me of someone else we had on the podcast. Adeola ran a company called Femme Equity, really trying to reduce the pay gap of women, specifically women of color. And I'm just like, I love that. I think there's a lot of inequities, but there's also a lot of great people like yourself doing something about it and empowering other people. So I love that. Transitioning a little bit to inner beauty, I really like to ask, what is one thing that you love most about yourself that has nothing to do with your outer appearance and is all about your inner beauty?
I love that question. I think I'm a very kind person. I think I'm very kind. I think that I have a lot of, I would say I'm gonna change the world. I think I'm empathetic. I think that I can understand and kind of, I think that's the definition of empathy. The way I understand it is like I could put myself in the shoes of other people, and understand where they're coming from. And with that, because my mind very much works in terms of solutions as well, I'm like, okay, go to this podcast, go to this place. Here's the resource, here's the link, here's the email. And so those two together, I think, make me a problem solver, but one that doesn't, that allows grace, because some people aren't ready for the solution, but they need the space. And that's also part of the solution.
I think this whole time I just love your like very personalized and nuanced approach to this. I think finances can be so personal and are so it's a bigger picture than just knowing it. Like I love how you're tied in your money story and your emotions and growing up, and it really is the full picture. And it's so nice to see that like understood as more than just like the textbook scenario. So I love that in your talking about your empathy. And another question I love to ask, what is a time, or tell me about a time when you felt beautiful?
It was actually recently. I went to a Korean bathhouse, and I sat, and for those that don't know that are listening, like you have to strip fully naked, and just be out there in the streets, right? And so I was one of a few women who were just kind of bathing and relaxing, and I had had a really long week, and I had told myself that I needed to pause and just gather myself. And I went for like 2 hours. I went to the steam room and I sat again, and I soaked in, I guess the jacuzzi or whatever it is. And I got a glimpse of myself like as I was stepping out. And in that moment, I felt very beautiful. I think because I felt so relaxed. I felt so. Yes, I was naked, and that, I guess part of it, but I think the beauty of it was that I was very comfortable in my skin, and I think the fact that I had engaged in deliberately making sure I gave myself what I needed might have enhanced the feeling that I felt beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a such a self-care practice too, and that inner beauty coming out. Oh, I love that. So thank you so much, Kara, for speaking with me. I love what you're doing and love just all the work that you're doing to support and empower women. And thank you for sharing your story. Are there any last words or things you'd like to share, and where can people find you?
No, I love this conversation. I think that I am working towards really making this a whole movement. I think that we're all emotional people, and the more we deny it rather than incorporate it into one of the most impactful relationships that we have with something that's not a person, which is money, the better we'll be. I think that it adds to actually diversity when it comes to money styles, when you actually think about not pegging yourself to one way of being or a standardized way of being that doesn't take into context who you are and where you've been. And so I just want to say that as like a last word and why I'm so passionate about it. And I love it. I love what I do. I would also say that I am coming out, like I've written a book called Heal Your Relationship with Money, and I've updated it just to add some quizzes and some other resources for people that want to do even a deeper dive. And I'm excited about those revisions and updates. And it's available shortly in April, and you can get it on Amazon or even a link on my site. And I think in general, I'm looking towards just being able to partner with more organizations so we can kind of create programs. But then my next goal is policy. How can I affect policy to make this not just a here and there ad hoc or organization level, which is important, but how can we start really making this a part of our national discourse that this is important? This isn't just like, Gen Z or Gen or Millennials or Gen X that are just in their feelings, how is this an important part of our healing as a nation when it comes to finances and closing the wealth gap?
Oh, I love that so much. It's like such great aspirations for this work. I hope that we see that. I hope we see everything, the work that you're doing go, national and be part of policy. That's awesome. So wonderful. I will link to your website so you can check out more of Kara's work there. But thank you so much for joining me. I absolutely love this and super excited to dive into more of your book and your newly released book and all your resources. It's great.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode of Ignited by Inner Beauty. I hope this episode served as a reminder of just how beautiful and worthy you are. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe, provide a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and share this episode with a friend. For more information about Ignited by Inner Beauty, please go to ignitedbyinnerbeauty.com and sign up for my email list to keep up to date on new blog posts and podcast episodes. If you'd like to support my mission of empowering women, you can go to patreon.com/ignitedbyinnerbeauty and receive some exclusive content and giveaways. If you're not already following me on social media, please follow me on Instagram @ignitedbyinnerbeauty and Twitter @ignitedbeauty. Thank you again for joining me, and please tune in for the next episode.